It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and Fan Rack Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
I'm David Ermel, credentialed NBA writer and cover the Heat for SB Nation and OrangeKidney.com. I cover the league at large for FanSide and FanRack Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at Ermel13.
It's Monday, so we're opening up the mailbag. We're going to answer the questions that you sent in via email and Twitter. We've got some good ones, including if the Heat need to trade for a wing scorer. We're going to talk about James Johnson and if he should continue coming off the bench. But let's start with this question from David. Different David, not David, the co-host. Different David, who writes in, if Bam and Olynyk's stock rises further as Whiteside sits due to an illness, this will have Pat Riley considering trading Whiteside for pennies. Some cap space with a first rounder is not bad, especially if it means those two get to grow. So Hassan Whiteside, who left Miami's last game with an illness, expected to play tonight versus Orlando, but we'll see. If he continues to sit out, though, it does give Bam and Olynyk more playing time, and they look good when Whiteside was out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are the future of the franchise, you know, although Whiteside is actually under contract for another couple of years. But I think Olynyk's deal extends past Whiteside's, and obviously Bam is a young player with a lot of upside, so hopefully he'll be part of Miami's future. There's a lot to break down in David's question here. And I think that assumption that Pat Riley is even willing to consider trading Whiteside is a huge leap. Because from everything that we've heard, it seems like Riley is most enamored with the potential of Whiteside. Like, the reason why Whiteside is on this team and has the contract he does is because Riley, being the traditional coach that he is, loves the idea of a big man and loves the potential of Whiteside being able to be a dominant one. So I think that's why he's part of the team and will remain part of the team, at least in the foreseeable future. Look, if he's going to be traded, I don't see it, but I don't know that we can assume that Riley is looking to trade Whiteside for pennies or for anything, to be honest with you.
So that actually, that leads into the next mailbag question, which is sort of related to this. Chicharito Marito,
there you go,
asks, I nailed it this time.
He did.
Is the sample size on Bam too small to cut bait on Hassan? Is Hassan's trade value increasing or decreasing? And I want to touch on that first point there about Bam. I'm with you. I think that there is a inherent desire on the within the Heat organization to have a dominant big. I think that's something that they've always wanted. And you can even include Chris Bosh in this. He was not a dominant big in the traditional sense, right, but he was a dominant center for the Heat for a very long time. If Bam is good enough to be that guy, then I think that Riley would consider trading Hassan Whiteside. I mean, if you think about where this team is, and we've talked about the salary cap situation for a long time, trading Whiteside, if you're able to not take too much salary back, would solve a lot of problems for the Heat just from a financial standpoint. And there is a situation looming that they are going to deal with. Whiteside could help them deal with that, and he's one of their most valuable trade pieces still. I mean, I think we could talk about how valuable he is, but I don't think there's any doubt that he is one of the more valuable players in a trade on this team, mostly by default. There's just not that many valuable trade pieces on the Heat right now. Right. But if they look at Bam and his development so far as somebody who they want to further develop and develop within that starting role or a bigger role, then I think you do have to consider trading Whiteside. I just don't know if they view them as playing the same position at this point, even, because they've played Bam Adebayo at power forward a lot. So we'll see what this team is. But I think the more Bam and Olynyk play well together, and if James Johnson continues playing well in that front court position or plays better than he has been, but maybe he'll be better, there's just not enough room for all these guys, and Whiteside makes the most sense out of trading him because you just acquired Olynyk, you just drafted Bam. I don't know what you're going to trade James Johnson for. Whiteside does make the most sense if somebody's got to go, you know?
It's difficult to figure out where this team stands right now because, you know, we're 3 days away from the trade deadline, which is taking place on Thursday. We're recording this on a Monday, and we're fresh off two unexpected losses. I think Miami should have been able to pull out two victories there and unfortunately let both those games slide. They kept the Philadelphia game close. They were close to the Pistons as well, and then just proved to be inferior to those teams, at least on those particular nights. So with those two losses fresh in everybody's mind, I wonder if that impacts how the front office is viewing this roster and whether or not they determine that it's necessary to move forward, that they're looking more into the future beyond this season. From everything that we've understood up to this point, they were all in on this season. The reason why they brought back the team they did, why they re-signed everybody on this roster, why they added a guy like Kelly Olynyk was because they were looking to add, to build for this season and make some impact, make some noise this year. I wonder if they consider now whether or not they're capable of even doing that, and maybe it's time to move on. And maybe they will move a guy like Whiteside to Chicharito Morito. And his second question, I think anytime Hassan steps out onto the floor, his trade value decreases. He is like that proverbial car you drive off the lot. At this point, I think he represents a lot of potential because of his length and wingspan and athleticism and everything else. But there are so many instances of him not living up to that potential that every time he plays out there, his value becomes less and less. And I think if you're expecting a first round pick in exchange for Hassan, that might be really, really optimistic. I just don't know that he generates that kind of interest around the league. If you're going to trade for a shot blocker, you could either trade for an older one in Tyson Chandler. You could trade for a comparable and probably better player in DeAndre Jordan. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why you would invest anything in a guy like Hassan Whiteside unless you're desperate for a rim protector. And even then, again, there's so many different things in where he's a liability that I don't know if that's necessarily a good fit. I don't know if that's a good investment for any team around the league. You have to hope that somebody is desperate for a rim protector, either a team like Portland, who really wants to make the playoffs and just feels like the Yusuf Nurkic acquisition last year has just finally not paid off, and maybe they're looking to make a move. I don't see it, though. I don't know where.
I think the reason you make the move for Whiteside over a guy like DeAndre Jordan is just because you want the security of that long-term contract, knowing that because DeAndre Jordan can opt out and walk after a season. But that would be the only reason, because you're right, DeAndre Jordan in every way is a superior player to Whiteside. But look, I'm with you. I don't think that they can get a first-round pick. A lottery pick is out of the question. But maybe a team that's picking in the 20s, that I could see. A first-rounder and a salary back in return. That I could see as a good return for Hassan Whiteside.
Okay,
there is that, and you're right. Every time he takes the court, there just seems to be something else, you know. And I don't think that he's helping his own trade value. There is that conspiracy out there that he's got a fake illness, and that the Heat are resting him before the trade deadline, the last few days before the trade deadline, as to not let him further devalue himself while he's on the court. I think that's load of crap, honestly, because it does sound like he's going to play tonight. But, you know, Whiteside is – we think of him as a young player, I think, but he's 28 years old. His best basketball is probably behind him. He is currently in his prime. I mean, people say, oh, well, he hasn't played in the league. He doesn't have that many miles. Okay, but he's still a 28-year-old seven-footer. Like, he has still been – he is still 28 years old, and I don't know how much longer his body is going to be in prime physical peak condition. You know, that's the problem here. It's not necessarily the miles. It's just that centers just don't typically last that long. You know, the shelf life on big centers isn't that great. And if you think about what Whiteside does well, it's not that he's a cerebral player. You know what I mean? It's not like this guy is going to be okay with age. I mean, he is a guy that very much relies on his athleticism, his jumping ability, his strength,
which has been subpar this year and probably due to injury.
That's true. That's a good point. And so, you know, Whiteside is much closer to James Johnson in age than he is even Kelly Olynyk or Bam Adebayo. And I think we forget that. So if the Heat are going to say, all right, you know what, we just don't have the goods to compete in the East, he again makes the most sense to trade. But as far as his value goes, it's got to be the right team. It can't be a team, and this is why ultimately teams like Phoenix and Dallas just didn't make as much sense, because they're younger, they're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to trade for a 28-year-old center. So it needs to be like the perfect team, a team that wants to win now, is willing to punt on maybe some assets, and is desperate for that rim protection to a point where they're probably one of the worst defenses in the league and that they can improve, because Whiteside's not going to take a top 10 defense and make them better, but he could take the 25th best defense and turn them into 15th.
What rank is Cleveland again?
All right. Speaking of trades, Tyreek Evans, he's been on the trade block and he could help a lot of teams. We'll talk about if the Heat should make a move for him, but first, listen up. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return on investment with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional form of media. And the number of people listening to podcasts continues to grow every year, as opposed to people reading newspapers or listening to radio. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable and they're based on the number of listens. So it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedoneat@gmail.com and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. We've got an interesting question about whether or not Goran Dragic being an all-star impacts the Heat's team-building strategy, which seems to be the theme of this mailbag. But let's get to this next question. It comes from Kevin. Kevin asks, Riley has got to make a trade for a wing scorer, right? It's an interesting question. Look, Miami has struggled to be consistent on offense. You and I have talked a lot about the fact that the Heat just don't have a go-to offensive player on the wing. Look, there's nights where Goran Dragic looks dominant, nights where Josh Richardson looks dominant, but at the end of the day, they still need probably a little bit more from the wing. They need more scoring. They probably need an extra punch there. I've got some guys listed here.
Yeah, I see that.
I want to know what you think.
I see that list, and I've got some thoughts.
Okay, so I'll read them to the listeners. Will Barton, who we've talked about before. Rodney Hood, who we've talked about before, and Joe Johnson. Justin Holiday from Chicago on a two-year deal, playing well for them on a bad team, putting up points on a bad team, but showing some stuff. Maybe they're willing to part with him for the right asset. Marco Bellinelli, who I won't let go. Jeremy Lamb and Shabazz Muhammad, who apparently wants out of Minnesota. Not an overwhelmingly great list there, but that might be look, the Heat aren't trading for Jimmy Butler. That might be more of the area that they'll have to play at as this trade deadline approaches. What do you think?
I agree with you 100% that if they're going to make a move, I don't think that they have any other option but to find a middling player like this and try and plug them in there. But I don't know that any of these guys that you listed is going to make a severe impact on this team. Like, I don't think that any of these guys make a significant or a significant addition to this roster. Mm-hmm. Like, they all have aspects to their game which are positive. Barton's a great scorer. Hood has flashes of greatness and length. I mean, he could really be a superstar player based on his potential. He just hasn't reached it. Utah, Joe Johnson, I mean, I think we've got to give up the ghost there. I don't think Johnson's a real possibility. Just because of his age, he's going to want to play for a contender the way he did for Miami three seasons ago. So I just don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, Bellinelli, is Lamb on the trading block? I haven't heard anything about that, but I'm curious why you...
I put him in there because his salary makes sense for what the Heat could probably absorb. Okay. And I think that the Hornets would trade Lamb for the right price. Like, if they could get an asset in return, mm-hmm. I think Jeremy Lamb could be had.
Yeah.
That's why I included him there.
Look, I mean, I like the potential.
But I don't want anything to do with Jeremy Lamb.
No, yeah. I mean, I like the potential of some of these guys to be nice scorers off the bench. But, I mean, look, this team, their bread is buttered on defense. And I don't know that any of these guys, with the exception of Hood, really contributes much defensively. And Hood's defense is, you know, inconsistent at best.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they're going to come in here and make an immediate impact, or they're going to take away minutes. That's the problem there. If you're making a move for a guy like Will Barton, he's eating into playing time for some of our young players like Jay Rich and Justice Winslow. Whether or not he's going to provide more scoring than either of those two guys, that's probably a very, very good bet. You know, Will Barton is a much more consistent scorer, even though he does have his inconsistencies as well. But there's going to be issues on the defensive end where you're going to go, why the hell is he out there in clutch moments when we need a guy like Winslow and Richardson? And I don't know that you can just platoon guys for offense, defense as needed. You know, that's not the way the league works. You need to be able to get into a rhythm. You can't just have a guy there who's a valuable scorer like some of the players that you listed and then take away the defense of our young wing players like Jay Rich and Winslow.
I think that You're absolutely right. The only way that you can acquire one of these guys is if you move one of those guys. Like if you move Winslow, or I want to throw his name in here, Wayne Ellington. Mm-hmm. Like if the Heat decide, look, Wayne Ellington, we discussed in our trade deadline preview, is probably Miami's most valuable asset. Absolutely. At this point. Most valuable player that could be traded, because he's on an expiring deal, because he's been so effective from 3-point range, and because that skill set is such a need and a want in today's NBA that we think they. So if the Heat decide, look, we need somebody that's more dynamic than Wayne Ellington, because Wayne Ellington is basically a come off the screen shooter at this point for us, but we need somebody that can handle the ball a little bit more, who can create their own shot more so, and sort of replace that Dion Waiters role. I could see them parting with Wayne Ellington in order to just acquire that sort of player, but it's not going to be for Will Barton, I don't think, because I think Barton's contract expires at the end of the year.
It does.
Joe Johnson, definitely not. Justin Holiday, not good enough to warrant that sort of deal. And neither is Bellinelli Lamb or Shabazz Muhammad. So maybe there's another deal out there. Again, this is just a list that I threw together. But you could trade Ellington and Winslow and upgrade something. Like, that seems like if I were a different team, that's an enticing package. A young player like Justice Winslow, who maybe I believe in, because I think there's front offices that still believe in Justice Winslow, mm-hmm. and then Wayne Ellington, who can help me right now. That's a good package. I just don't know. It would take a lot, if I'm Miami, to part with those two players. I would need somebody that is at least as good as Josh Richardson, if not better, and possibly more consistent. But I think that there's a wing scorer that might be able to be traded for out there. I don't know who it is. I think Shabazz Muhammad makes sense, to be honest, because his contract is so, it's like $1.3 million. Like, if Minnesota just wants to get rid of the headache that is Shabazz Muhammad, are they willing to just take on AJ Hammonds? You know what I mean? Are they willing to just take on Jordan Mickey or O'Carroll White's expiring? Are they willing to just take on Roddy Magruder? Like, Roddy Magruder would thrive in that Chicago style defense with Tom Thibodeau, you know? So I could see that. I mean, honestly, I would prefer Magruder over Muhammad, but maybe that's the sort of deal that happens here. But that's about it. Otherwise, I think the only way Miami's offense improves is internal improvement from Winslow and Josh Richardson specifically.
A couple of things. I just noticed right now on Shabazz's contract, he's got a 15% trade kicker, kind of like Tyler Johnson. And next year, he's got one more year in his deal, but it's a player option. So he could come in there, get paid a lot for the rest of the season, and then opt out if he wants a bigger deal. But that doesn't seem very likely either, considering the fact that he's probably not going to get enough playing time and he hasn't really shown what he can do. I think he still needs next year as another opportunity for him.
I mean, he did the whole Dion Waiters bet on himself thing. And he lost because he's just not a good player. He's not good. I don't want Shabazz Muhammad.
No, I know. I think Minnesota fans, they kind of held out hope longer than most people should have. So, I mean, I'm wondering, we've talked about him before, and he seems like he's kind of no longer into their long-term building plans. Harrison Barnes, I know you can't just trade. Would you trade Winslow and Ellington, knowing that his deal is coming off the books, and maybe James Johnson or Tyler Johnson, perhaps, in a package for Harrison Barnes? I don't even know if those players would work for that. But is Barnes the kind of guy that you see in Miami as a potential star that you can build around?
Yeah. No. You know, I think the only Barnes trade that I would do personally is Whiteside for Harrison Barnes, and that'd be it. I think the other guy out there is Jabari Parker. Look, if Milwaukee is desperate to fix that defense, they could do it with Whiteside. I think he makes a lot of sense there. And if they're willing to part with Jabari Parker, it makes sense. But there's a lot of issues going forward with their luxury tax situation, salary cap situation. They might prohibit them from even doing that. It's something that they've got to figure out either way. Like if they, for example, trade Jabari Parker for Whiteside, they'll have to clear salary in one way or another. So they're going to have to trade Henson. Which they could probably include in that Whiteside deal. But there would be a second move. They'd have to trade another Dellavedova or Teletovic contract, or even a Chris Middleton contract in order to stay whole there. Let's move on to our next question here. Dylan asks, is there any way that the Heat can make a trade for Tyreke Evans? We need his scoring ability. So related to Kevin, another wing scorer there. Tyreke Evans is averaging 19.5 points a game for Memphis right now. He's playing out of his mind. Is there any way that he can make a trade for him? No, I don't think so. Memphis wants a first-round pick. Miami doesn't have one. And if you look at teams with assets like Boston, Cleveland, teams that are in that Tyreke Evans mix, they could beat any offer that the Heat would and could offer in their sleep. So I don't think there's any way the Heat end up landing Tyreke Evans.
I don't even know that Tyreke is worth making a huge acquisition for. Like, I don't know that you'd want to give up much to get a player like that. Again, considering that he's in the last year of his deal, he's never been consistent. That he's playing better this year on a really bad Memphis team where nobody else is there to really take up the scoring doesn't really speak volumes as far as his overall impact on a playoff contender like Miami or anybody else for that matter. So I'm not sure that you're going to get a first round pick for Tyreke, but at the same time, if somebody thinks that maybe you can get 10 points per game from him, you know, he's not going to chip in at the same rate that he is right now for Memphis. But if he can provide some kind of production for a playoff contender and you think he's a good investment, that's fine. But I mean, that's a really, really, that's a short-term rental on a player that you're not going to be able to incorporate beyond this season. And I don't know that he's going to be consistent past this point. So I'm not sure why you'd want to make a move for Tyreke Evans. Look, it looks pretty on paper considering his numbers in Memphis. Those numbers won't translate anywhere else.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a high scorer on a bad team situation there. I mean, his ability to pass on the move and obviously score and handle the ball is valuable, but it's not going to solve a team's scoring problems, which Miami has. It'll just supplement or an already good team. I could see why it would make sense for Boston. You bring Tyreke Evans off the bench when Kyrie Irving needs a rest. That makes sense to me, but he's not going to just solve Miami's offensive problems. Our last two questions are coming up, but first, a quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, last two questions. Here we go. Billy asks, you constantly say the Heat need about two all-star level players to make it to that next level. Does this view change any now that Goran Dragic is an all-star? Do we only need to look to acquire one more all-star talent to compete for the top of the East? Does this mean Miami is closer to that level than we expected? I don't remember saying that the Heat needed two all-star players. Yeah, maybe I have. I say a lot of stuff.
I think you've talked about it in terms of where we rank in context of other teams and other playoff contending teams. And that makes sense. I mean, two all-star levels, if not necessarily a big three, then at least two all-star level players. But to Billy's point regarding Goran, he made the all-star team. I wouldn't say that he's an all-star level player. Like, and if he is, he's right on the cusp of it and you know, almost barely reaching that very small plateau there. And I think he would be the third kind of all-star level player on a contending team. Like he's not the two that you want to build as your superstars or anything like that. He's more of a third level kind of guy. And that's fine. Look, he's a really, really good player on this really good team. And Miami still has overall great depth, but look at Boston. If you're using that same comparable model there, as far as a superstarless team, you could make, I mean, they've got Kyrie Irving and Al Horford there. Those are their two all-star players, and that's undoubtable. On top of that, they also have a number of young players and other guys that contribute at a high level. Look, they also have a third all-star who unfortunately got hurt this year in Gordon Hayward. So that's what we're talking about as far as all-star level players, not a guy like Gordon.
We could even go back to that. You've made the comparison to that 60-win Atlanta team and their best players. I mean, that was Al Horford was on that team. Paul Millsap was on that team. I'd like to reframe this thought process that we're going with here about having all-star players or not all-star players. And Billy mentioned this, and I cut this off in his question. He's like, does it matter? He referenced the point that Goran Dragic got in because of injury, and I think that does matter. He was not a shoe-in all-star, and I think
– But look, Jeff
you know,
Teague,
if you're in a team-building
Jeff
process –
Teague made the all-star team you know, with the Hawks.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who's not – I don't think he's viewed around the league as an all-star player just because he made an all-star. Like a guy like Jrue Holiday in New Orleans, again – an all-star, not an all-star level player. You know, Goran Dragic has that accolade, but he's not necessarily considered as an all-star level player.
Because he's not a top – number one, he's not one of the top 24 players in the league, right? So there's already that. I don't think he's a top 40 player in the league, and that's where I want to kind of pivot this thought process. There seems to be that cutoff point where if you have two of the top 40 players in the league, you can get to that next level. Right now, Miami tops off at like – their best players are in the 50 to 60 best range, you know? And I think that's where Goran Dragic is. I actually, before we started recording here, I did a quick list of the top 50 players in the NBA. Dragic is right. I didn't get to 50. That was where Dragic was right around 50.
Oh, you had 49 other players.
But if you look at teams that I do, if you look at players who are in the, that have two of the top 40 players in the league, like let's look at Memphis, you know, with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, when they're healthy, Memphis is still a good team. If you look at Toronto over the past years, Toronto is a legit contender this year because of all their depth. But even in the past, they've been able to compete because they have Lowry and DeRozan, two top 30 players. If you have two top 40 players, it seems to be that you can sort of reach that next level that Billy alluded to. And I think the Heat are two or three levels before, like there is another level that the Heat can get to before they're even Eastern Conference contenders, you know? And I think that to get to that next level where they're like a 48 to 50 win team every year, they need two top 40 players. And to get to that next level, to be contenders in the East, then now you're talking about having all NBA players and things like that, which I don't think the Heat are necessarily close to getting to. But that would be, to me, the next level. So if you can upgrade Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside, basically, who are, I would consider, the two best players right now, or if Josh Richardson were to develop into a top 40 player, which I think he can be, then now we're talking about something that could really elevate the Heat, absolutely. You know? Let's get to our last question here. Claudia writes in, see, JJ off the bench is where it's at. James Johnson, of course, coming off the bench when Hassan Whiteside has been out because the Heat have been starting Olynyk and Bam Adebayo, and James Johnson, his stats all season have been better when he's coming off the bench. David, do you think that the Heat should continue to bring James Johnson off the bench even when Whiteside returns?
No, I think he should play alongside Whiteside. Like, I think the reason why it makes sense for him to come off the bench, well, you know, I don't know. Now I'm kind of seeing things differently. The versatility of Olynyk and Adebayo, I mean, is so impressive there, and I think that's why they bring that they have that in the starting lineup when they're in there without Whiteside. But I think that's the whole thing, is that you need a guy like James Johnson to supplement the fact that Whiteside is not a versatile player. Like, he needs to be able to play alongside a guy like that. And I think Adebayo and Olynyk are too duplicative of what Whiteside does, as far as from a size standpoint and from a limitation defensively standpoint. Also, they're not going to guard. I mean, Adebayo can, but I think Johnson is much more versatile, much more switchable on defense. I think if you're going to have Whiteside as your starter, Johnson needs to continue starting alongside him.
Yeah, the other option is to play Justice Winslow next to him at that stretch four spot, the small ball four spot. But then now, I mean, you're adding another body into that front court rotation, and it would be untenable. Like, there just would not be enough minutes to go around there, unless you just cut Bam Adebayo's minutes off completely, which is what the Heat did earlier in the season when Winslow was playing that four position. But Bam has showed so much since then that you have to get him minutes. I mean, this is a guy who defended Blake Griffin one-on-one very credibly in the last time that when Miami and Detroit played in their last game. But, you know, I think you need to bring James Johnson off the bench in a vacuum because he's just better. And there are certain players that have been better coming off the bench. It's not a unique situation to James Johnson. He is certainly, I think, a better player when he comes off the bench. He's more comfortable. He performs at a higher level, even though his defense always is there, and it's a valuable part, especially when you play him next to Whiteside. But his offense seems to lack when he's starting, for whatever reason.
But isn't that, I don't know what it is. That speak to the fact that he's probably playing against second-tier players when he comes off the bench?
100%. But look, he's worth it, I guess, if you look at it in that – I don't know. He's been very productive. So I don't know. Maybe you still try to fix that, whatever that is leading to him being worse as a starter. Maybe you try to fix it there. He's not a knockdown catch and shoot guy. I think that hurts. And that's why maybe it helps when he goes against second unit guys, because it can handle the ball a little bit more and score over smaller players and use his big body to sort of just bully his way to the rim, which he seems to do a lot more of when he's coming off the bench and playing against opposing benches. Yeah. But that's another reason. Look, we can go back to that first question. If there's a reason to trade Whiteside, maybe that's another reason. It kind of like unlocks all of these things that you can do, because if Whiteside's not there now, you could start Bam and Olynyk and then bring James Johnson off the bench. I mean, is getting a better version of James Johnson worth trading Whiteside? No, but it just... That seems to be the thing that kind of is, you know, every time we talk about the problems with this roster, if it does seem like it won't be solved by Whiteside getting traded, but you could possibly solve them by trading Whiteside and allowing those players to grow. But a lot of that, again, you take a step back, but it would be for, you know, the future of developing these players. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking about it, and it's probably something that deserves its own individual topic for a whole show, but is Whiteside's presence on the team, does it raise Miami's ceiling or lower it? I mean, is Miami a better team potentially with Whiteside or without Whiteside?
I mean, that's the big question, right? I think right now they're a better team with Whiteside. But in the future, you know, I think Bam Adebayo's ceiling is much higher than Whiteside's. I think Kelly Olynyk's ceiling is much higher than Whiteside's at this point. I mean, Kelly Olynyk, we think of him as like kind of a veteran because he's been around for so long in Boston.
In his fifth year.
He's only 26, yeah. You know? So he's younger than Whiteside. I just think both of their ceilings and both of their games are better
too,
suited for today's NBA. And yeah, I just, I don't know, man. I mean, I have been not shy about thinking that this team needs to trade Whiteside.
Yeah.
I think there is a level that this team could reach. I think their ceiling is actually higher and it's without Whiteside. Not this year.
Yeah.
Not this year. And that's the hard part about it. Like, if you're the Heat, you've got to determine, you know what? We're just not good enough and we're going to admit it and we're going to make a move for the future, because right now this team is built to win now, yeah. And they can't win now, but that's how they're built. So if you're going to make a move, that's the move, and you got to really just lean in on basically Bam Adebayo being your franchise center.
And it's without Whiteside, this roster is a lot more representative of Spoelstra's overall vision for basketball, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're smaller, it's more switchable, just a different. I mean, I think that's just the way he'd prefer. Like, he can coach big men. He's done it before. He did it with Whiteside, et cetera. I mean, but at the same time, I think he would prefer a much more fluid, versatile offense, which can't take place with Whiteside playing the way he does.
Yeah, and then the things you lose with Whiteside, you lose that theoretically easy scoring, right? Yeah. Just a 7-footer, you could throw it into the post, which his team tends to rely on a little too much, and it bothers me. Defensively, you do take a step back in rim protection. I mean, he is a great rim protector. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. And there you do take a step back because Olynyk and Bam just can't do that to the level that he does it. But if you're willing to take that step back, I think the rewards down the road are going to be fruitful. And eventually, you know, if you could trade Whiteside for some sort of asset and make something of that asset, that's another you know, thing that you've got to consider here. If you could trade him for a first round pick, what do you use that first round pick on? And can that potentially help you? You know, a team like Miami right now that is just frankly strapped for draft picks, they just don't have them. Right. For the foreseeable future. So if you can get something back like that in return, it's worth considering, you know, especially if you can use that asset to sort of address the issues on this team already, which is shooting, scoring, ball handling, and any other number of things. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game against the Magic. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions for next week and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your comments and questions for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.